When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello Media Podcast listeners, we've got a great show for you today from a rooftop bar by BBC Television Centre. More on that in a sec, but first, we've got a special offer for all the podcast makers among you. If you want to grow your podcast, you might be interested in attending Grow, a new conference next Friday, that's the 22nd of July in London, from the organisers of the British Podcast Awards. Yes, that would be me and producer Matt. Grow is a day of talks from some amazing speakers from BBC Sounds Audio Lab, Apple, Spotify, Max Creative, Acast, and more. And we're offering you, yes, you, our wonderful listeners, a discount. Just use the code MEDIAPOD to get 20% off your ticket. That's the code MEDIAPOD. If you're looking to take your podcast to the next level, just go to britishpodcastawards.com/grow. You can see the full program there and get your ticket using the code MEDIAPOD. It's next Friday. It's in the sun at the British Podcast Awards site. You'll have a lovely time. Go get a ticket. Hello, welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On the show today, media legislation is postponed whilst a new Prime Minister is selected. But will the new leadership alter the fate of Channel 4 and the BBC? The BBC, meanwhile, is setting out plans for a consolidated TV news channel launching in 2023, and 70 UK jobs are on the line. Spotify has acquired musical trivia game Hurdle, but will fans take to the new owner? Plus, we'll hear all about the BBC Audio Lab's creator programme. Commissioning producer Leanne Alley and creator Adam Smith share the exciting new podcasts coming to BBC Sounds this summer. And in the media quiz, will our grand prize match Gary Lineker's salary? That's all coming up in this edition of the Media Podcast. And in the news this week, Netflix announced a global advertising and sales partnership with Microsoft for its ad-funded tier. In the world of sport, the Competition and Markets Authority has opened a probe into groups BT, IMG Media, ITV and Sky, investigating whether the companies are fixing freelance rates and breaching competition laws. Plus, the BBC published its annual report marking a centenary of broadcasting. But the report revealed internal trouble with a widening pay gap for women, ethnic minorities and people with disabilities, and staff numbers at their lowest point in a decade. Director Tim Davey acknowledged there'd been regretted losses, but also indicated we should be seeing new talent coming through the BBC. And the Daily Mirror appoints Mail's John Stevens as its new political editor, replacing Pippa Creer, who's off to The Guardian. But in today's show, I've got two experts with me in person to unpack all these breaking news headlines. And that's right, you might be able to hear a bit of background noise because I'm on the rooftop of the broadcaster at TV Centre. First up is Press Gazette's UK editor, Charlotte Tobit. Charlotte, welcome back.
Hi, Matt. Nice to be here.
It's lovely to be here on in a rooftop.
Yeah, during the heatwave, but not too hot,
sorry. Yes, it's the good day, it's the good day. It's been a busy week for journalists. What's it been like for everyone following the unfolding events at Number 10?
I mean, when is it not a busy week for journalists anymore? But it's been hectic. I mean, only political journalists, I think, can really speak to how crazy it has been. But yeah, it's just non-stop, isn't it? And, you know, there's all the Prime Minister stuff, but then there's also loads going on with the BBC this week. You know, it's just there's all sorts, and it kind of feels like everything's happening before maybe we can breathe in August, and everyone's just trying to get it out the way now, so let's hope we can all have a breather soon.
Also with me is audio producer and technologist extraordinaire Anne Charles. Lovely to see you too.
And you, it's so lovely to be in person.
It is. And what have you been up to in the summer so far?
Well, I've had an interesting summer. I'm temporarily living in the Greater Birmingham area because I'm very, very lucky to be taking part in the Commonwealth Games ceremonies as a volunteer. So it's not completely confirmed yet, but look out for Team Guyana. This is all I'm going to say on that one.
Okay.
And then the usual amount of just trying to deal with everything in life. There's always more spreadsheets when you run your own business than you really are expecting, aren't there?
I think there are always more spreadsheets in life, whatever you do.
In general, yes.
Someone who probably hasn't looked at a spreadsheet ever is Boris Johnson. Well, maybe just looking at a spreadsheet to see who is supporting him, and we know, well, not that many at the end of last week. But his exit has somewhat thrown media legislation into doubt. In the coming week, the DCMS is intended to publish the Channel 4 privatisation legislation, launch a major review of BBC funding, and pass the Online Safety Bill. Charlotte, are they all on the bench?
I mean, maybe, yeah. So, I mean, Online Safety Bill, for example, they've said it's been dropped until we've got a new leader in the autumn, but it's completely up to the new government, obviously, whether they continue with it or not. And I think there's quite a lot of doubt because a lot of freedom of speech organisations and people like that have also become more and more vocal in their opposition of it. So to start with, people are quite up for it. I think people recognise that it would be good to protect children from, you know, porn and things like, you know, all the harmful things that children can see on the internet. But then people started to realise, oh, actually, there's lots in here that could affect wider freedom of speech. But it's got to be said that maybe news publishers weren't as worried because there was an exemption in there for them. So news publisher content basically isn't included. They platforms aren't supposed to take it down, essentially. And actually, before it got tabled this week, they also strengthened that so that platforms also shouldn't take it down even before the appeal process has taken place. So news publishers were generally quite happy. But other people weren't. And yeah, maybe that backlash is now going to stop it from coming back in the autumn as well. BBC and Channel 4, it completely depends on what the new government thinks. You know, it can all completely change. Nadine Dorries has obviously been quite keen on them as culture secretary, but, you know, she's been a very loyal person to Boris Johnson. If it's quite a different prime minister and quite a different government, then who's to say that they would keep that, you know?
Well, and she was getting into rows with other leadership campaigners on Twitter over the online harms bill. Do you think the Channel 4 privatisation, which I know a lot of our listeners are interested in, do you think this will push it off the agenda or it'll still reappear?
I think it actually depends on the state of the DCMS. So I'm not so across what's going on at DCMS, but I am pretty across what's going on at the DfE at the moment, the Department for Education. And similar things happening. They've got loads of ministers changing all the time. We haven't really had a minister or a secretary of state in post in the DCMS for longer than a year or two for a very long time now. So effectively, civil servants are driving a lot of this through. And so I think it will depend on what happens with the new Prime Minister, who they put in post, what their priorities are. But it's also down to the legislative timetable and whether they get a slot. So if it's not yet being published, then it might well be put on the back burner. But there's a lot of chaos and turmoil at Parliament at the moment. The Lords are very unhappy about various pieces of legislation that are going through. So it's kind of fascinating to watch, but I can't give you an answer. I think my only prediction would be that whoever the new PM is, I don't see Nadine Dorries staying in post.
Yes, that's probably a good prediction. I think one of the challenges for all of them is if you are a new Prime Minister, you've got a lot of things to worry about. Is Channel 4, which already has split some of your MPs and your supporters in the Lords, is it worth going for?
I really don't think it is at this stage. It's not making massive losses right now or anything like that. And there's not a huge appetite for changing things across the nation, as far as I can tell. There are probably other priorities the new Prime Minister would like to pursue. I suppose it just depends on the internal wrangling and who gets what slot for which piece of legislation. So,
on the topic of Channel 4, the Chief Alex Mann there has suggested that the Tories try to change some wording in its annual report to support the privatisation. I look at this, Charlotte, you know, the government owned Channel 4. Surely they can get them to say whatever they want in the annual report.
I think it's just particularly worrisome when obviously it's a time when Channel 4 don't agree with the privatisation, and maybe they should have the chance to make the case for how well they're doing, which they are, revenues, you know, up in the annual report. And I don't think it's usually a sort of lobbying tool, the annual report. So it's kind of not surprising based on how intent parts of the government are on the Channel 4 privatisation, like the fact that more than 90% of people who responded to the consultation were opposed to it, you know, and they've just gone, well, we want to do it anyway. So it's hardly surprising that they're trying to keep the narrative how they want it to be.
I mean, Alex, to start with, was pretty sort of trying to play both sides and saying, well, you know, I'm the chief executive, our owners want this. I mean, her and her head of programs now, they've abandoned all of that, haven't they? They're just more than happy to have any arguments about their channel now. Is that because they think they'll just be off if there's a new owner? So why not say what you think?
I don't know. If you're the chief executive of an organisation, it would be prudent to be seen to be fighting for it rather than going, oh, well, whatever, just do what you like. I think that also, as regards to the report, in their knowledge, it was the only time in 40 years anyone had tried to do this. It didn't actually happen in the end. So it's not standard behaviour for a government to do that. I mean, yeah, if I was working for Channel 4 or an indie, I'd expect the chief executive to say, Channel 4's great, look at the things we're doing. We think it's important, it should stay.
And it was wording around financial performance to try and align it with the government's view that it's perhaps not doing so good. Actually, it's been doing pretty well.
I don't think there's any suggestion, is there, that the wording they put in the report was wrong?
No. There we go. Turning to another ongoing story, former Radio 1 star Tim Westwood has faced fresh claims of sexual abuse, including the rape of a 14-year-old girl. He continues to deny all allegations. Charlotte, the BBC is sort of across both sides of this story because they've done much of the reporting about it, bringing it to the fore. And then another part of the BBC is obviously not defending it, but they've been going through trying to find any previous investigations. And I think there's some more information to come from them. It's not great news for the BBC, really, whatever the result is it?
No, definitely not. But I do think it's a great example of the BBC holding itself to account. And despite the cuts it's seen over the past couple of years, doing great journalism and sort of not shying away from that just because it's about itself. And I know there's lots of weird meta stories that come out about the BBC where it has to report on the BBC, but I just think it's really important that they did do this, actually, and the fact that they collaborated with The Guardian on it is really, really nice to see as well. But yeah, we've got to wait and see what they're doing. A review, aren't they? I think they are expecting to publish the results only in about 2 weeks, so hopefully we won't have to wait too long.
And Tim Westwood was at Global up until April with a Capital Extra show. They've remained sort of largely silent since the allegations have come out. Should we be expecting an investigation from them?
I don't know if there have been any complaints made around his time at Global. I think that this is probably part of a much wider industry issue around how we deal with stuff like this. Having had a dig around in the BBC's annual review, I can see that there's only been one official complaint of sexual assault in the last year and only 53 official complaints relating to bullying and harassment overall. Not all of those have been upheld. Now, on the one hand, that might sound like a good thing, but when there's over 21,000 full-time equivalent staff, so actually more staff than that, that seems very low, and that seems to me like a complaints procedure or a complaints environment that might not be working. One of the other issues with the very brave women coming forward in the Westwood case to share their stories is that a lot of them weren't employees of any organisation, so didn't have a mechanism to complain. And this is something that I've been speaking to a few different people and organisations around. I think it's something we can't solve entirely because this is something that happens in society as a whole. I don't know if it's particularly a radio industry issue, but there are issues that I see, and one of those is I think that if you are a contributor or a guest or you're not a member of staff, you have no idea where to go or where to complain. I think we should do better. I think we should be able to come together and have some sort of central whistleblowing hotline or something like that. I don't know how many people would use it because most of the time these things go unreported. I don't think I know a single woman who's not been assaulted at some point. Often in a work-related environment, not always at work. So yes. There's a culture around drinking, there's a culture around things that happen outside work, and then in this case there's a culture around what happens to guests and fans and young people coming in who are, well, I mean, we don't know entirely in this case because it's not gone to a criminal court, but for example, when there are cases when there's talent involved or there's a massive age gap, men not understanding their power or men who do understand their power and use it to in the wrong way. So I think the issue here is really around what we're doing as an industry to make a safer environment for people and also to make sure that we find out about this stuff. Because when one case comes out, you often find other people come forward. And then there will be people who said, oh, I heard rumours for a long time. And it's kind of finding a fair way of getting those rumours to surface earlier so that we can deal with stuff in reality.
I mean, we see that, you know, sexual assault reporting is low anyway, because it's an incredibly difficult thing to talk about to the police. I mean, there is an interesting challenge for media who put people on pedestals and make them famous about, you know, people, if they do terrible things, what's but outside of their broadcasting environment and their job, what's the way to allow people to report it? Because we do occupy a sort of a special position, don't we? We need to yeah. go ahead and probably do more than if someone was a milkman or
I think so,
like that.
Because they gained their position of power and influence by the fact that we put them on our platforms. And so therefore they had kudos. And depending on the broadcaster that you work for, you may also have trust just automatically by who you're associated with. And so that stuff that we need to talk about and we need to all reflect on in our own practice and in our own organisations. And sometimes it needs to be spelled out to people. Mm. Yeah, it's a huge thing. And I think we collectively as an industry need to do a lot better at talking about it and not always just hiding behind, oh, well, our official complaints procedure's not had many people, so there's no problem. Because there is a problem.
The media, like lots of organisations or institutions, were able to brush things under the carpet for so long and kind of get away with the sort of extra power that they had. And people obviously use power in lots of ways, some horrible ways that we see with sexual assault, but even, you know, down to marginalising groups and things like that. I think media's been fortunate to get away with this stuff before. Is it now facing more of a reckoning on all manner of issues?
Perhaps. I think also in this case it's also interesting, a lot of the children, as they were, and then young women, were black, and it never occurred to them that they would be believed. And that's partly because of institutional power with broadcasters and also with police. And then there's the natural kind of like, did that happen? Is that normal?
Was it my fault?
Was it all of that? Yeah. You know, would anyone believe me? Yeah. Was I in the... I shouldn't have gone out late anyway. Yeah. All of that stuff that especially anyone might experience, or especially younger people who don't know what's what. And I think there are, I've had conversations with people, younger women coming into organisations. Unfortunately, there are still conversations to be had about known individuals and their behaviour, especially around alcohol. There are conversations that happen in my DMs sometimes when people ask for advice or we share information about this, that and the other going on. You know, nothing where we've got concrete proof of mass terrible behaviour that you can take to someone. But these things are known, and often it's a case of listening and making sure that when people tell you something that you are able to believe them and follow it up, whilst also having, of course, the balance of a criminal justice process and innocent until proven guilty and all of that stuff. But
well, the Westwood case continues, and we will see what the BBC report on what it knows or what it knew soon. And on to our deep dive. Are you on the lookout for some new summer podcasts? Well, this week we're exploring a roster of new podcasts coming to BBC Sounds from the Audio Labs programme. I spoke to commissioning producer Leanne Alley and one of the lucky podcast makers, Adam Smith, to find out what Audio Labs is all about and what new shows are coming to BBC Sounds.
So much dust. Oh my god. Here we go. This is older than I thought. It's a box labeled Eisenstein Project. And it's got 1, 2, 3, 4 records in it. Like old LPs. They're just black discs in thin, discolored paper wrapping. Shit. Eisenstein Project. I found it.
So BBC Sounds Audio Lab is an accelerator program that we started last year, which aims to platform diverse voices on BBC Sounds. And we started this program because we realized that it's actually really difficult to get your podcast commissioned on Sounds if you're not already connected within the industry, because you have to pitch through an already existing production company. And we were just missing out on loads of ideas from individual creators who aren't necessarily within audio, but just have really great ideas. And so we put out a call out last summer. We were looking for people with between 1 to 5 years worth of content making experience and had a podcast idea. And it was open to everybody, but we really encouraged those from underrepresented groups to apply. And we were looking for stories that tell different perspectives, untold stories, and that really platform underserved audiences. And as a result, we had 6 amazing ideas that have come through and that we've commissioned as a full series on Sounds, including Adam's really amazing podcast, and you can hear them all from this summer.
So why should the BBC get involved with this? You know, anyone can create a podcast, they can get it hosted, they can upload it. What's the value in you guys getting involved at the BBC?
As a podcaster myself, it is very, very difficult to create a podcast that is beyond a conversation format, that has a lot more intense production needs, such as a documentary, such as a drama, such as a hybrid of genres. It requires so much more time, so much more resource. Some of those things, like if you're an individual creator, it's actually quite difficult to get access to. And there are very few places within the UK space where you can actually get funding for podcasts. I feel like the Arts Council is really the only place as an independent producer where you can get that. And there's just very few opportunities to get commissioned. And so we really wanted to open that out in a way that allowed more independent creators who had really great ideas a platform and a space to make the content that they want to make, because at the BBC and at Sounds, that's how we can better serve all audiences as well.
Okay, so Adam, you are one of these lucky few that have been commissioned. What yes. was the process to get there like, and why did you think, hey, I'm going to throw my hat into this ring?
Well, I had been making podcasts before for a couple of years independently and collaboratively, and I had been developing this new idea with a collaborator for quite some time, actually, and we were really struggling to get it off the ground. We were struggling to get funding for it, even though we approached various different organizations and people, because it required quite a lot of work. Like Leanne said, it's not just a pure conversational podcast. It required time for research and then lots of sound design and lots of different elements. It needed money behind it, and it needed support, quite a lot of support behind it. And so when we saw this call from the BBC on Audio Lab, it just looked perfect, really, because it was completely open in terms of like what kind of ideas you could pitch. They were like really, really open about it. And so I pitched in for it as a producer and said, you know, look, here's this idea that I've been working on. Here's the support that I would need. And so just through an application, I had to make a clip, sort of a kind of like a tester reel of like what the podcast would sound like. So I roped in some friends to help me like do some voices on that. And then I produced that and then wrote the various statement answers that I had to and sent in the application.
So this is the film we can't see,
yes.
And it's due to drop on BBC Sounds imminently. What's the pitch? What's the idea?
The film we can't see is a 6-part podcast series where documentary meets imagination. And it's about a bunch of filmmakers in the 1920s and early 30s, just as cinema was transitioning into sound. In the 1920s, there was a queer cinema, an anti-fascist cinema, an anti-racist cinema. But then into the 1930s, the fascists started gaining power and conservatives in the film industry started gaining power. And so more and more censorship came in. And when the Nazis took power in Germany, they burnt lots of films. And obviously, makers went into exile. And I have found a box of sounds which I think come from this time period. And listening to these sounds and interviewing people about these sounds and finding out about these sounds and finding out about this time is helping me to imagine the film that these people could have made in 1930 if the world hadn't turned to fascism. That's the film we can't see.
So, Leanne, there's obviously a number of other creators dropping podcasts this summer with you guys. What else should we listen out for?
Oh, there's tons of great stuff. I'm really excited for everybody to hear them, because obviously we've been working on it and talking about it for so long that now you can actually get to hear them. So, we've got also the Museum of Bad Vibes, which is created by Hannah Adan, which is the story of some museum objects that have been taken from their original home and now live in British museums. And so Hannah is bringing these objects to life through dramatization and also exploring how they got here, why they're here, and should they be sent back to their original homes. We've also got Blossom Trees and Burnt Out Cars by Talia Randall, which is looking at who has access to nature and wildlife in the UK through the lens of race and class, and looking at the different communities that are affected by not having access to nature, such as ethnic minorities, such as the traveller community. And she's profiling those who are trying to widen the access to nature across the UK. We've also got The Reset by Jade Scott, which is a look at some of the messier aspects of life through the lens of a Black woman coming of age in her 30s. So she's exploring themes such as dealing with burnt out and mental health, Black men's mental health, different ways that we communicate joy and how the body remembers trauma, and also dating in digital worlds. We also have Colouring in Britain by Tommy Dixon, which is charting the lives of inspirational Black British people whose stories haven't been that well documented. And lastly, we have Who is Michael X by Hamza Salmi, which is the story of Michael X, who was a Black British Black Panther and activist, one of Britain's most prominent Black Power leaders. But again, his story hasn't been very well documented and isn't very well known, and we're using his story to look at what his past can tell us about Britain today.
That was Leanne Alley and Adam Smith. The film We Can't See is out on BBC Sounds right now, so go and have a listen, and keep an ear out for the other brand new podcasts arriving this summer. If you'd like to hear more about what it's like to have a podcast produced by the BBC, you can hear more about this from Adam and Leanne on our Patreon. Just go to patreon.com/mediapod. We'll be back after this.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And we're back with part two of the media podcast. Still on the sofa here in the rooftop bar is Charlotte and Anne to cover a few news in briefs. First up, breaking as we are recording, is that the BBC announced the combination of its two TV news channels. They're saying it's launching as part of the BBC's Digital First initiative. It'll also save a bobble too. We knew a little bit about this, that they were going to merge the BBC News Channel and BBC World News. They've announced that the new channel will broadcast from London in the UK daytime, then from Singapore and Washington DC overnight. Charlotte, you've been working on a piece about this story. What can you tell us?
So as well as what you've just said, the BBC confirmed that they're expecting 70 job losses in the UK, but 20 on and off screen created in Washington. Staff knew, like, in advance they were going to be told about it today and seemed quite worried. Saw a few presenters overnight sort of starting to really defend the value of having separate UK and international news channels on Twitter. There will still be the ability to have, like, breakout UK streams. So if there's UK breaking news, or they said certain news stories, I don't know what that means yet. And also, interestingly, they're going to start doing, like, televised versions of some of the biggest radio shows, like sort of following on, interestingly, from what Talk Radio has obviously done with Talk TV during the day. That shows Talk Radio Studios, and, you know, what they were doing on YouTube before, and LBC do it on YouTube. So to start with, it will be Nikki Campbell's Five Live show, which will be on BBC Two as well as the new news channel. So that will be interesting. But yeah, lots of journalist jobs to go, but they're saying also a new live and breaking news team to still deal with global breaking news. Yeah, basically, it's definitely still quite early days.
It's due to kick in sort of April next year, so I guess kind of new financial year. It's not long to get all that ready, is it?
No, I mean, if you look at during the pandemic, they did sort of this modernisation programme to BBC News and changes around the regions and journalism as well. But that felt like it rolled out a bit slower. This is, what, 9 months or so. That's for a major change, like international change. That does feel a lot quicker than what they were just doing before. Maybe it's worth, I think, saying that Krishnan Gurumurthy, obviously of Channel 4 News, did a keynote speech at the Oxford Media Convention yesterday, and he raised this plan. Obviously, we didn't have all the details yet, but we knew it was happening. And he was really concerned about the potential impact on, basically our ability, the BBC's ability to cover UK news in particular, and that a lot will be lost that we currently have. Like, it's a really great service at the moment, in my opinion.
I mean, Anne, this is just what we've been talking about over the last year, isn't it? The BBC does not have the money to do what it did in the past, and it has to make significant changes to be able to afford the variety of what it does. Is this really a terrible thing, bringing together the two channels?
Some cost saving is inevitable. I don't think the way that they've split the plan makes any sense. So when I'm Queen of the Universe and also Director General of the BBC at the same time, because you can do a job share, right? That's fine. So I would have thought that having the international news service is a very different look and feel from the domestic news service. The domestic news service effectively exists to provide a clip service in case something really big happens. So they're rolling on all the time, but they've obviously got people ready to go in case something, you know, the aliens land and we've got the footage, that's fine. The international service, there's lots of partners around the world. It's going to an audience that doesn't understand UK domestic news in the same way. It's a completely different product. What does make sense is having a simulcast or a merge or a refine of the product between Five Live, and the BBC domestic news channel. So I would say that you need a rolling news service that can work well across all platforms, which is not an easy thing to do, but I think the BBC would have the skill to do it. And then that would also mean that Five Live would be able to not have a random sport, because yet again, when we had all the breaking news and all of your friends who are journalists were herring round after what's going on with the Prime Minister and what's happening next, you couldn't rely on being able to turn on Five Live or turn on a BBC audio source and have that news coverage. So I was listening to a lot of BBC News, just listening to it, or LBC or Times Radio, because I have nowhere to go for a rolling news service for BBC audio. So merging Five Live and the domestic news channel makes sense. Merging the domestic and international news channel means that they're going to potentially do both terribly. The other thing that's incredibly sad, I don't know how you're going to be able to handle more breaking news with 70 fewer staff. And that newsroom has been cut and cut and cut and had to pay people relocating and very experienced people moving and has been in turmoil for, well, it's never ending at the BBC, but several years they've just been cut and cut and cut. And eventually you are going to notice changes in terms of what you see in here and the depth of the coverage, because there's only so far that you can push people. And my heart just goes out to that newsroom because, you know, it's horrible, isn't it?
I think it's an interesting thought about bringing the radio and the TV together. I think it's very easy to have a very TV focused mind, and if all you do is work in television, merging the two TV news channels seems the obvious choice, but actually there's probably a bit more you can think about.
I'd say merge the domestic products and have the international product as something else, and then obviously they can feed to each other when there is a massive story that makes sense. That's what I would do. If anyone would like to commission me to look after that, I am available.
Head of multi-platform newsness for the BBC, Anne Charles. Well, onto some other radio news. Nation Broadcasting is planning a big switch for some of its radio stations as it ends a franchise agreement with Bauer. And if our listeners don't know, what is Nation Broadcasting and what are they up to?
So they're one of the smaller but enthusiastic radio groups. They've got quite a few million listeners now across the country, and they're running local and national radio stations. They're making a lot of good use of small-scale DAB to extend their reach, so relatively new platform for broadcasting on digital radio. And so they have had this agreement in some parts of the country. If you listen to Greatest Hits or Hits Radio, you're actually listening to a Nation station, and they've licensed the brand from Bauer due to some complicated dull stuff to do with mergers back in the day, I imagine. That's normally how these things work. So now that agreement's coming to an end, so they will be rebranding those stations to be either Nation or Easy. They also run some stations called Breezy that they're probably going to be rebranding Easy. I hope everyone is keeping up. Never mind the quiz at the end. This is better. So that's all lovely. The really exciting thing is that they're going to be launching their own news service.
Yeah, so historically they've used other people to do their news, haven't they?
At the moment they're using Bauer's news service, but because all of those agreements are coming to an end, they've taken the opportunity to launch their own news service. It's going to be led by John Ryan, who has loads of experience. He's former BBC Radio Manchester. He's also does a lot of work with Gaydio. He's worked internationally. So he's got that nice mix of understanding music and understanding speech stations. And so they're going to be providing a new service that is got lots of locally based information and teams. They're going to be producing it remotely to bring down the cost, which means they can actually afford to do it, as far as I understand. And it's going to be tailored so it makes sense for the station. And I think this potentially marks a signal to a move back to having local content being an important part of your offer. So, when we just heard about job cuts in journalism in one part of the industry, it's nice to hear that there's a little bit of journalism happening and jobs being created in another part.
Well, the big switch happens in September across a lot of their radio stations. And to wrap up our news in brief, Hurdle has a new owner, and that's the streaming giant Spotify. Charlotte, are you a Hurdle fan?
I do Hurdle. I'm in competition with my brother every day.
So explain to people what it is if they don't know.
So basically, Wordle is obviously for getting a word as quickly as possible with the letters. Hurdle is getting a song as quickly as possible. It starts by just giving you 1 second, then then you, if you don't get it, you can skip 2 seconds, 4 seconds, up to 16 seconds if you don't get it and that you've lost. And there's a good range of genres on there, I must say, because I can go for days thinking, oh, I know all this music, and then suddenly there's all this like R&B stuff that I, and dance and like current Radio 1 stuff that I have no idea about. And then thankfully it goes back to like Arcade Fire after that. I'm like, okay, I'm safe again.
Have your stats managed to survive the Spotify change?
To be honest, Anne's shaking her head, so I'll go to her in a sec, but I was rubbish at keeping up with the stats, so actually I didn't notice.
I mean, Anne, Spotify says that this acquisition signifies a move to making their platform more interactive. Are there any other changes do you think Spotify will make to gamify music?
Well, I mean, I'm sure over time they'll start sliding in some adverts or popping people. I mean, in the past, I think you went to, if you wanted to listen to the full song and it was available, you went to SoundCloud, so now you go to Spotify, right. So that makes sense. It makes sense that Spotify have got an addictive game that makes you look at their brand at least once a day, and then you can click through and get distracted. We'll have to see what they do. At the moment, they clearly didn't do any bug testing as regards the stats. I didn't really know there are stats until it was pointed out, and now I've had a look. But if you press the stats thing, it says, oh, go and collect your stats from the old website. And you go to the old website, and it says, go to the new website. And then you just go around in a loop. So I think, I'm really sorry, it looks like probably your stats were gone forever. But on the plus side, Charlotte, that means that you've definitely beaten your, all of your relatives, like with 100% accuracy, because that's definitely what I saw on your stats, right? That's,
thanks, Anne. Yeah, thanks for noticing.
I was looking at some tweets from a musician, and he was saying, because it now uses the Spotify embedded player, that if people are good at guessing the hurdles quickly, maybe that will tell Spotify's algorithm that people are skipping that song, and therefore it won't show up on regular Spotify.
Judging by how it's been coded so far, I think that's a lovely idea, but possibly not yet.
Okay. All right, well, that's obviously one trivia game, but everyone's favourite trivia game, and I'm sure it's only a matter of time before it's acquired by Spotify, is the media quiz. This week, we're playing BBC Salary Top 20 True or False. It's a simple game of True or False based around the BBC's highest paid presenters. If you're ready, we'll get going. You need to buzz in with your name. So Charlotte will say...
Charlotte.
And Anne, you will say...
Anne.
There's no internet gaps that we normally have, which, which causes massive problems on the quiz. It's all in person. So a true reflection of quiz skill. Right, true or false? Topping the list is Zoe Ball.
False.
Anne.
I'm afraid you have to buzz in with your name. I will let you off that time. Charlotte. I've just been told that we have to be very tough with the quiz. No, you did not say your name, so it goes to Anne.
It's false, but I think we should share that quote.
Yes, you're correct. It is false. Zoe is the broadcaster's second highest paid talent, and her salary is actually falling for a second consecutive year. She's taken a pay cut. Question number two, Gary Lineker is the only name to earn over £1 million a year. Is that true or false?
Anne. True.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, Anne.
Again, we're just both so good. Like, yeah. I think on the public list of BBC PEs who aren't doing the stuff with BBC Studios that we don't know about, then yes. That's true.
That is true. So the former footballer and Match of the Day presenter landed the top spot. But as Anne said, it only really accounts for basically news, sport and radio. Anything made by BBC Studios isn't included in the list. Right, question number three. Victoria Derbyshire has made the top 20. True or false?
Anne. That is true.
It's false.
Is it? Oh, she's just had a pay increase.
While she hasn't made the top 20, she might be on her way to being on the list. Well, as she's been announced as the new host of Newsnight.
Drinks are on
week.
Her then.
And finally, question number four. Greg James is the only addition to the list. True or false?
Charlotte. False.
No, it's true. He enjoyed a salary increase of £80,000, placing him at number 10 on the list. Obviously, a breakfast show presenter. He's added a couple of podcasts to his repertoire, and I think does a bit for Radio 4 as well. So I think that means that Anne sort of gets two lots of two-thirds of points, making her the winner of the quiz. She gets her salary put to the top 10 next year, but not paid for by us. Well done.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
That's our show for today. My thanks to Charlotte Tobit and Charles. Charlotte, what are you working on at the moment? Anything interesting to share with our listeners?
Only that if you like podcasts, which you obviously do, check out our new Press Gazette podcast, which is called Future of Media Explained. And there's definitely room for both of these because we take one theme a week every week. So, for example, events or the metaverse or podcasts. So yeah, it's wherever you get your podcast now.
And there's a big interview in that, I think, this week with the big history podcast from Immediate Media, isn't there, I think?
Yeah, David Musgrave from History Extra. They're doing very well. So yeah, good podcast lessons.
They're saying they make over £1 million from their podcast.
They're on track to this year, yeah.
And Anne, what's coming up in the world of Radio Tech Con?
So Radio Tech Con, yeah, we're getting everything ready for that. 28th of November back at IET London Savoy Place. So head to radiotechcon.com and sign up for updates and you'll be the first to know when tickets are on sale. And then for me, I'm annecharles.tv. That's Anne without an E. And I'm currently working on a really exciting project with a colleague. Can't quite tell you all the details yet, but it's all about object-based media and preparing the industry for an object-based media future. So if you or when your organisation needs training and stuff like that, then come and see me.
Excellent. And if you've enjoyed this episode, you can show us you mean it by doing any or all of these things. Why not tell your colleagues about the show on Twitter or LinkedIn? Very easy to do. Not many of you do it. Why don't you hop on in and paste the URL podfollow.com/mediapodcast and say how much you love the show. Also, of course, you can become a patron of the show at patreon.com/mediapod. You'll be able to access an archive of deep dive interviews with media experts, including the one we had this week. That's patreon.com/mediapod. And of course, follow us to hear new episodes when they drop in your podcast app of choice. My name's Matt Deegan. You can find my weekly newsletter about the audio industry and more at mattdeegan.com. The producer is Phoebe Adler-Ryan with support from Matt Hill. It was a Rethink Audio production. We'll see you next week.